This is Audible.
Listening Library presents Scat by Carl Hyacin, read for you by Edward Asner. 1. The day before Mrs. Starch vanished, her third-period biology students trudged silently, as always, into the classroom. Their expressions reflected the usual mix of dread and melancholy, for Mrs. Starch was the most feared teacher at the Truman School. When the bell rang, she unfolded stiffly like a crane and rose to her full height of nearly 6 feet. In one hand, she twirled a sharpened Ticonderoga number 2 pencil, a sure sign of trouble to come. Nick glanced across the aisle at Marta Gonzalez. Her brown eyes were locked on Mrs. Starch, and her thin elbows were planted like fence posts, pinning her biology book open to Chapter 8. Nick had left his own textbook in his locker, and his palms were sweating. "Good morning, people," said Mrs. Starch, in a tone so mild that it was chilling. "Who's prepared to tell me about the Calvin cycle?" Only one hand rose. It belonged to Graham, who always claimed to know the answers but never did. Mrs. Starch hadn't called on him since the first week of class. "The Calvin cycle," she repeated. "Anybody?" Marta looked as if she might throw up again. The last time that had happened, Mrs. Starch had barely waited until the floor was mopped before instructing Marta to write a paper listing 5 major muscles used in the act of regurgitation. Nick and the other students had been blown away. What kind of teacher would punish a kid for puking? "By now," Mrs. Starch was saying, "the photosynthetic process should be familiar to all of you." Marta gulped hard twice. She'd been having nightmares about Mrs. Starch, who wore her dyed blonde hair piled to one side of her head like a beach dune. Mrs. Starch's school wardrobe never varied. A polyester pantsuit in 1 of 4 faded pastel colors and drab brown flats. She painted heavy violet makeup on her eyelids, yet she made no effort to conceal an odd crimson mark on her chin. The mark was the shape of an anvil and the subject of wild speculation, but nobody had gotten up the nerve to ask Miss Starch about it. Marta's eyes flicked miserably toward Nick, then back to the teacher. Nick was fond of Marta, although he wasn't sure if he liked her enough to sacrifice himself to Mrs. Starch, who had begun to pace. She was scanning the class, selecting a victim. A droplet of perspiration glided like a spider down Nick's neck. If he worked up the courage to raise his hand, Mrs. Starch would pounce swiftly. Right away she'd see that he had forgotten his biology book, a crime that would be forgiven only if Nick was able to explain and then diagram the Calvin cycle, which was unlikely. Nick was still struggling to figure out the Krebs cycle from Chapter 7. "Plants, as we all know, are vital to human existence," said Mrs. Starch on patrol. "And without the Calvin cycle, plants could not exist. Could not exist." Graham was waving his arm and squirming like a puppy. The rest of the class prayed that Mrs. Starch would call on him, but she acted as if he were invisible. Abruptly, she spun to a halt at the front of Marta's row. Marta sat rigidly in the second desk, behind a brainy girl named Libby, who knew all about the Calvin cycle, all about everything, but seldom made a peep. "The chart on page 169, Mrs. Starch went on, "makes it all plain as day. It's an excellent illustration, and one that you are likely to encounter on a test. Quite likely." Marta lowered her head, a tactical mistake. The movement, slight as it was, caught Mrs. Starch's attention. Nick sucked in a breath. His heart raced and his head buzzed because he knew that it was now or never. Marta seemed to shrink under Mrs. Starch's icy gaze. Nick could see tears forming at the corners of Marta's eyes, and he hated himself for hesitating. "Come on, people, snap out of your coma," Mrs. Starch chided, tapping the pencil on Libby's desk. "The Calvin cycle?" The only reply was a ripping noise, Marta's trembling elbows tearing holes in the pages of her book. Mrs. Starch frowned. "I was hoping for a sea of hands," she said with a disappointed sigh. "But once again it seems I'll have to pick a volunteer, an unwilling volunteer." As the teacher pointed her pencil at the top of Marta's head, Nick raised his hand. "I'm toast," he thought. "She's gonna crush me like a bug." Lowering his eyes, he braced to hear Mrs. Starch call his name. "Oh, Duane," she sang out. "Great," Nick thought. "She forgot who I am." But when he looked up, he saw the teacher aiming her pencil at another kid on the other side of the classroom. The mean old bird had totally faked him out, and Marta, too. The other kid's name really was Duane, and Nick had known him since elementary school, when he was 2 years ahead of Nick and known as Duane the Dweeb. One summer, Duane the Dweeb grew 5 inches and gained 31 pounds, and from then on, everybody called him Smoke, because that's what he wanted to be called. Some kids said it was because he was a pyro. "So, Duane," Mrs. Starch said sweetly, "have you finished Chapter 8? Rumpled and sleepy-looking, Smoke grunted and raised his eyes toward the teacher. Nick couldn't see his expression, but the slump of his shoulders suggested a profound lack of interest. "Duane? I guess I read it, yeah." "You guess?" Using a thumb and 2 fingers, Mrs. Starch spun the yellow pencil into a blur, like a miniature airplane propeller. Under less stressful circumstances, it would have been entertaining. "I read so much," Smoke said. "I forget which is which." Several students struggled to smother giggles. Marta reached across the table, nudged Nick, and mouthed the words, "Thank you." Nick felt his face redden. "For raising your hand," Marta whispered. Nick shrugged. "No big deal," he whispered back. Mrs. Starch moved across the classroom and positioned herself beside Smoke's desk. "I see you brought your biology book today," she said. "That's progress, Duane."
"I guess.
But you'll find that it's much easier to read when it's not upside down." Mrs. Starch rotated the textbook using the eraser end of her number 2 pencil. Smoke nodded.
"Yeah, that's better."
He tried to flip open the book, but Mrs. Starch pressed down firmly with the pencil, holding the cover closed. "No peeking," she said. "Tell me how the Calvin cycle produces sugar from carbon dioxide, and why that's so important to photosynthesis."
"Give me a minute."
Smoke casually began to pick at a nasty-looking zit on his meaty, fuzz-covered neck. Mrs. Starch said, "We're all waiting," which was true. The other students, including Nick and Marta, were on the edge of their seats. They were aware that something major and possibly legendary was about to occur, though they had no clue that within 48 hours they would each be questioned by sheriff's deputies and asked to tell what they'd seen and heard. Smoke wasn't as tall as Mrs. Starch, but he was built like a bull. His size and attitude intimidated all of his classmates and most of his teachers, though not Mrs. Starch. When Smoke tried to flick her pencil off his book, It didn't budge. He leaned back, cracked his knuckles, and said, "What's the question again?" Marta groaned under her breath. Nick gnawed his upper lip. The longer smoke stalled, the worse it was going to be when Mrs. Starch lowered the boom. "For the last time," she said coldly, "tell us about the Calvin cycle." "Is that like a Harley?" Smoke asked, and the students erupted in laughter. They grew quiet just as quickly because Mrs. Starch was smiling, and Mrs. Starch never smiled. Marta covered her face. "Has he got a death wish or what?" she said to Nick, who had a bad feeling about the whole scene. "So, Duane, it turns out you're a comedian," Mrs. Starch said. "And all this time we thought you were just another dull lump with no talent and no future." "I guess," said Smoke, who had resumed probing his inflamed blemish. "You do a lot of guessing, don't you?"
"So what?"
"Well, I am guessing that you haven't even glanced at Chapter 8, said Mrs. Starch. "Am I right?"
"Yeah."
"And I'm also guessing that you're more interested in playing with your acne than you are in learning the photosynthetic process." Smoke's hand came off his neck and dropped to his side. Looming over him, Mrs. Starch said, "A teacher's job is to identify and cultivate each student's strengths, and then encourage him or her to utilize those strengths in the pursuit of knowledge." There wasn't a trace of anger in her voice, which Nick found creepy. "So, Duane," she continued, "what I'd like you to do, since you're obviously fascinated by the subject, is to write a 500-word essay about pimples." The class cracked up again. Nick and Marta, too, in spite of themselves. This time, the kids couldn't stop laughing. Mrs. Starch waited before continuing. "You should start with some basic human biology. What causes glandular skin eruptions in adolescence? There's plenty of information on the Internet, Duane, so I'll expect at least 3 source citations. The second part of the paper should summarize the history of acne, both medically and in popular culture. And then the last section could deal with your own personal pimple, the one with which you seem so enchanted." Smoke stared darkly at Mrs. Starch. "Here's the best part, Duane," she said. "I want the essay to be funny, because you're a funny fellow, an extremely funny fellow."
"Not me."
"Oh, don't be modest. You had everybody in stitches just a moment ago." Mrs. Starch turned her back on Smoke and bobbed the pencil gaily in the air. "Come on, people. What do you say? Wouldn't it be amusing for Duane to write a humorous essay on pimples and then read it aloud to the whole class?" Nobody was giggling anymore, and even Graham had yanked down his hand. Smoke wasn't a popular kid, but it was impossible not to feel sorry for him. Mrs. Starch was being exceptionally brutal, even for Mrs. Starch. Marta looked queasy again, and Nick was starting to feel the same way. Smoke was a loner and definitely freaky, but he never hassled anybody as long as he was given plenty of space. "Nick," Mrs. Starch said. Nick sagged at his desk and thought, "I can't believe this." "Mr. Waters, are you with us today?"
"Yes, Mrs. Starch."
"Be honest. Wouldn't you and your classmates enjoy hearing Duane read his pimple paper?"
Nick's chin dropped to his chest. If he answered yes, he'd risk making a mortal enemy of Smoke. If he answered no, Mrs. Starch would pick on him mercilessly for the rest of the school year. He wished that he could make himself faint, or maybe swallow his own tongue. An ambulance ride would be better than this.
"Well," Mrs. Starch prodded. Nick tried to think of something to say that would free Smoke from doing the essay, and at the same time not anger Mrs. Starch. Honestly, I'd rather learn about the Calvin cycle, he said, than Dwayne Zitz. A few students snickered nervously. No offense, Nick added with a lame nod to Smoke, who sat expressionless. Mrs. Stark showed no mercy. She spun around and tapped Smoke on the crown of his head. 500 words, she said, by the end of the week. Smoke scowled. I don't think so. Excuse me? It ain't fair. Really? Is it fair for you to come to my class so unprepared and hopelessly unfamiliar with the study material? To waste my time and that of your fellow students? You think that's fair, Dwayne? Smoke brushed a shock of jet-black hair out of his eyes. I apologize, Kay. I just let it go. Mrs. Starch bent down slowly, peering like a heron about to spear a minnow. Well, what happened to our class comedian? She asked. Are you all out of jokes? I guess. That's too bad, because I expect 500 hilarious words double-spaced. No way, Smoke said. Mrs. Starch positioned the tip of the pencil so that it was even with the tip of his nose. Way, she said. Nick looked anxiously at Marta, who had closed her biology book and laid her head upon the desk. Smoke took a swat at the pencil, but Mrs. Starch jerked it away. Get out of my face, he said, or else you'll be sorry. Is that a threat, Dwayne? Mrs. Starch didn't sound too worried. Smoke said, ain't a threat, it's a fact. No, here's a fact. Once more she leveled her pencil at his nose. You will write a 500-word essay about pimples, and you will read it aloud to all of us, or you will fail this class and have to take it again next year. Do you understand? Smoke crossed his eyes as he stared down the yellow shaft of Mrs. Starch's number 2 Ticonderoga. I guess, he said. Then he calmly chomped the pencil in half, chewed up the graphite along with the splinters, and swallowed the whole mouthful with a husky gulp. Mrs. Starch backed away, eyeing with alarm the moist stump of wood that remained in her fingers. Nobody else in the room moved a muscle except for Smoke, who dropped his biology book into a camo-patterned backpack, stood up, and ambled out the door. 2. As they were walking home from the bus stop, Nick told Marta, It's not over between those two. You just wait. I'm so glad there's no class tomorrow, she said. I can't deal with it. She's a witch, and he's a total moron. The science classes were taking an all-day field trip to the Black Vine Swamp, which is way out near the Big Cypress Preserve. Mrs. Starch herself had picked the location, describing it as a festival of photosynthesis. The swamp was famous for exotic orchids and ancient cypress trees, but Nick was hoping to see a panther. We'll probably catch malaria from the mosquitoes, Marta said. But it can't possibly be more painful than her stupid biology class. Nick laughed. We haven't had a rain for 2 weeks. There won't be many mosquitoes. Spiders, then, whatever. Marta waved and turned up the driveway of her house. Nick lived 3 blocks away in the same subdivision. His house was actually closer to the bus stop, but lately he'd been taking the long way home so that he could walk with Marta. From the front step, she called back to him. Hey, do you think he'll show up for the field trip? Smoke? Who else? Nick said. I hope not. Me too. Marta waved once more and disappeared through the doorway. As soon as Nick got home, he hurried to the computer in the den and checked his email. He was waiting to hear from his father, a captain in the National Guard, who for the last 7 months had been stationed in the Anbar province of Iraq. Nick's dad emailed almost every morning, but Nick and his mother hadn't heard from him in 3 days. This had happened before, when his father was on a field mission with his unit. Nick tried not to let himself worry. His mom was a guard at the Collier County Jail. She got off work at 4:30 in the afternoon and was usually home by 5:15 at the latest. Nick stayed at the computer, researching an English paper and rechecking his email every few minutes. By the time his mother came in the door, he'd still heard nothing from his father. "How was your day?" his mom asked. "Some kid ate Mrs. Starch's pencil. You wouldn't believe it," Nick said. "Gobbled it right out of her hand." "Any particular reason?" "He was mad, I guess. She made fun of a big old gnarly zit on his neck." Nick's mother set her purse heavily on the kitchen counter. "Tell me again why we're spending all this money on a private school." "Wasn't my idea," Nick reminded her. "Smaller classes. That was one reason. And better teachers, you said?" "So we'd been told." "And the low freak factor," Nick added. "Right," his mother frowned. "And now you're telling me there's a boy in biology who thinks he's a termite?" "More like a beaver," Nick said. "But Mrs. Stark shouldn't have made fun of him. He's not a kid you want to mess with." Nick's mother took a bottle of V8 juice from the refrigerator and emptied it into a small glass. "What's the pencil eater's name?" she asked. "Dwayne Scrod. You don't know him." "Spelled S-C-R-O-D? Nick said, "Yeah, that's right." "Then it's Dwayne Scrod Jr. I know his father, Dwayne Sr. "From the jail?" Nick's mom nodded. "He did 6 months for burning down a Chevy dealership in Port Charlotte, all because his Tahoe blew a transmission on Alligator Alley." No wonder the kid turned out the way he did, Nick thought. His old man's a whack job. "What's for dinner?" Nick asked his mother. "Spaghetti, spaghetti, or spaghetti?" "Guess I'll try the spaghetti." "Excellent choice. Hey, did Dad email you at work today?" "No. How about you?" "Not yet," Nick said. His mother managed a smile. "Don't worry. He's probably away from base camp. I'll go look on the computer again. Let's eat first, Nicky. Know what? I'm not really in the mood for pasta. Why don't we go out for some barbecue?" "You sure, Mom?" "Sure as can be," she said, finishing off the juice. "What time is it in Iraq right now?" "Like 1:30 in the morning." "Oh, then he's probably asleep." "Yeah," Nick said. "I bet he's sleeping. I bet we'll hear from him tomorrow." The headmaster, Dr. Dressler, was neat and cautious and mild-spoken. He was happiest when the Truman School ran smoothly and harmony was in the air. He was unhappiest when the students and faculty were buzzing and distracted.
"Tell me exactly what happened," he said to Mrs. Starch.
She held up the half-eaten pencil. "The young man has serious anger control issues," she said. Dr. Dressler examined the evidence.
"And you're sure he didn't spit the rest out?"
"Oh, no. He swallowed it," Mrs. Starch reported. "Most definitely."
"Why didn't you send him to the nurse's station?"
"Because he stormed out of my classroom," she said, adding with disapproval, 16 minutes before the bell. 16 full minutes. The splinters could be harmful to his internal organs. I'm well aware of that, Dr. Dressler. The boy's parents should be notified as soon as possible, and informed at the same time of his disruptive and unacceptable actions.
Of course, Dr. Dressler said uneasily.
Like everybody else at the Truman School, he tried to avoid Mrs. Starch whenever possible. Ever since taking the headmaster job, he'd heard strange stories. She lived alone, yet no one seemed to know whether she was divorced or she was a widow. According to one rumor, her house was filled with stuffed dead animals, such as skunks and raccoons. According to other gossip, she kept 53 snakes as pets, including a diamondback rattler. Officially, Mrs. Starch's private life was none of Dr. Dressler's business. As a teacher, she was punctual, thorough, and hardworking. Students might be afraid of Mrs. Starch, but they also learned plenty from her. Truman classes always scored exceptionally well on the biology questions in the PSATs and SATs. Still, Dr. Dressler couldn't help but wonder if any of the weird tales about Mrs. Starch were true. He found himself uncomfortable in her presence, probably because Mrs. Starch was so large and imposing, and spoke to him as if he were a half-witted nephew. She said, "I'll be happy to phone Duane's parents myself." "It's all right. You've got the field trip tomorrow. We're all packed and ready to go, Dr. Dressler." "Good, very good." He smiled impassively. "But I'll contact the Scrods. It's my responsibility." "Oh, I really don't mind," Mrs. Starch said a bit too cheerily. "Let me handle it, please." Mrs. Starch rose to leave. Dr. Dressler carefully sealed the mangled remains of the pencil into a plastic baggie of the type used for sandwiches. "The pencil was in my hand when he attacked it. He could easily have nipped off my fingers," Mrs. Starch said. "I assume disciplinary measures will be taken." The Truman School had a detailed code of conduct for students, but offhand the headmaster couldn't think of a rule that applied to eating a teacher's pencil. He supposed that it fell under the category of unruly behavior. "What prompted Duane to do something like this?" he asked Mrs. Starch. "He became angry when I asked him to write a paper," she explained. "And the reason I asked him to write a paper was that he failed to do his class reading assignment. As a result, he was unable to discuss the study material when called upon."
"I see." Dr. Dressler opened a drawer and deposited the baggie containing the mangled pencil into it. "By the way, would you be coming along on our field trip?" Mrs. Starch asked. "You can ride with me."
"I'm afraid I can't," the headmaster replied quickly. "I've got a meeting, a board meeting in the morning. Board of Trustees."
"And if there's not a meeting," Dr. Dressler thought, "I'll arrange one." He was not an outdoor person, and his contact with nature was limited to glimpses of wildlife on Animal Planet, while he flipped channels between cooking shows. Dr. Dressler was certain that any place called the Black Vine Swamp was no place he wanted to be.
"You don't know what you're missing," Mrs. Starch told him.
"I'm sure you're right." After she left his office, Dr. Dressler phoned the Scrod household. A man answered, growled something that Dr. Dressler couldn't understand, and hung up. Perplexed, Dr. Dressler pulled out the file of Duane Scrod, Jr. It showed that the boy had been held back 2 years in elementary school and later was expelled from a public middle school for fighting with his P.E. teacher. During that scuffle, the teacher lost 3 teeth and the tip of his right pinky finger, which Duane had gnawed off and consumed. Dr. Dressler thought, "There seems to be a pattern here."
The mystery of how a person such as Duane Scrod Jr. got accepted into the Truman School was solved when Dr. Dressler came across a letter from the previous headmaster reflecting a large cash donation from Duane's wealthy grandmother, who was also paying his tuition. Dr. Dressler concluded that it would be bad for the Truman School and its future endowments if young Duane became seriously ill from devouring Mrs. Starch's pencil. He put away the file and somewhat wearily headed for the parking lot, where he got into his car and, using his nifty new dashboard GPS, made his way to the address of Mr. Duane Scrod, Sr. The unpainted block house sat along an unpaved road through some pine scrub on the outskirts of Naples. By the time Dr. Dressler arrived, the sun had set and the woods were humming with night insects. In the driveway sat numerous vehicles, none of them well-maintained. There was a battered pickup truck, a motorcycle with crooked handlebars, a mud-splattered ATV on blocks, a dented minivan missing two doors, and an SUV upon which someone had painted, in bright orange letters, "Boycott Smithers Chevy." Although no lights were on inside the house, the front windows were open and Dr. Dressler could hear classical music, which he found encouraging. It was a Bach concerto. The headmaster straightened his necktie and rang the bell. When no one responded, Dr. Dressler began to knock. Eventually, a lean, unshaven man appeared at the screen door. He wore hunting garb, a red trucker's cap, and no shoes. "You from the government?" The man pointed aggressively at Dr. Dressler with a rusty pair of pliers. "If you're here about the taxes, don't be surprised if I pull off your lips and feed them to my bird. I got a macaw who speaks three languages." Dr. Dressler resisted the impulse to run away.
"I'm from the Truman School," he stammered. "You Duane's father?"
"I am," the man said. "How about some ID?"
Nervously, Dr. Dressler drew a business card from the inner pocket of his suit jacket. Duane Scrod Sr. snatched the card and disappeared for several minutes. When he returned, a large bird with brilliant blue and gold plumage was perched on his left shoulder. With its crusty hooked beak, the macaw was shredding Dr. Dressler's card. Duane Scrod Sr. opened the screen door and propped it ajar with one knee.
"What did DJ do now?" he asked.
"DJ?"
"Duane Jr. I know he must have done something bad because, A, you're here, and B, he's not. You want to come inside?"
Dr. Dressler shook his head and politely said, "No thanks."
"Your son had what I would call a disagreement with one of his teachers today. A homework issue, from what I understand."
"And this is front-page news?" But Duane Scrod Sr. laughed, and McCall laughed, too.
It was a perfect imitation, and Dr. Dressler was totally creeped out. He realized that he'd made a mistake by visiting the house. Duane Jr. obviously hadn't told his father what had happened in Mrs. Starch's class, and undoubtedly he had no intention of telling his father, even if he got sick as a dog from eating the pencil.
"I don't see why you drove all the way out here," Duane Scrod Sr. muttered. "Did my dear old rich ex-mother-in-law call up the school or something? Light a spark under your butt?"
"No, Mr. Scrod. This is my idea."
Dr. Dressler was itching to leave.
"I just wanted to check on your son, get his side of the story, clarify our homework policy, you know, to avoid any further confusion about his responsibilities."
"Confusion?" Duane Scrod Sr. cackled, followed uncannily by his macaw. "DJ ain't confused. DJ's a DJ."
"Well, his teacher and I were concerned," Dr. Dressler said, which was only half true. Mrs. Starch hadn't seemed concerned at all. "You should be aware that DJ swallowed a pencil at school today. He might need to see a doctor."
Wayne Squad Sr. snorted.
Boy's got an iron stomach. When he was a little shrimp, he used to eat rocks, oyster shells, lug nuts, even a piano wire. Pencil won't hurt him, that's for sure.
Still, I'd feel better if I could speak with him, the headmaster said.
Well, like I said, he's not here. He didn't get home from school yet.
Dr. Dressler couldn't hide his concern.
But classes ended hours ago. It's already dark out, Mr. Scott.
You got good eyes.
Did DJ call to say why he'd be late?
Just chill out, guy.
Wasn't there soccer practice this afternoon? The headmaster said. Maybe he's still at the ball field.
Dwayne Scott Sr. informed Dr. Dressler that Dwayne Jr. wasn't on the soccer team, the football team, the lacrosse team, or any other team at the Truman School.
He keeps to himself, Dwayne Sr. explained. Rides solo, you might say. His granny bought him a cell phone, but I don't believe he's ever answered it.
Dr. Dressler felt a sickly wave of apprehension. He had a mental image of Dwayne Jr. lost in the woods and writhing in agony, his innards full of needle-sharp pencil splinters. This was followed by an equally unpleasant vision of Dr. Dressler himself being fired by the Truman Board of Trustees and then getting dragged into court by the Scrott family.
Sometimes DJ doesn't come through the door until way late, Dwayne Sr. was saying. I don't bother to wait up. He's a sizable young man, and not many folks are dumb enough to mess with him.
Dr. Dressler took out another business card and wrote his home phone number on the back.
Would you mind calling me as soon as you or Mrs. Scrod hear from your son?
There's no Mrs. Scrod around here, said Dwayne Sr., at the moment.
Oh, I'm sorry.
What for? We get by just fine, don't we, Nadine?
The macaw made a purring noise and nibbled the frayed collar of Dwayne Scrod Sr.'s hunting jacket. Dr. Dressler handed the card with his phone number to the man, who immediately gave it to the bird.
Don't you worry about Junior, he said, letting the screen door bang shut. He'll show up when he shows up. Night now.
Dr. Dressler hustled down the driveway toward his car, which out of habit he had locked. While groping for his keys, he heard an animal scurrying through the scrub, and he felt his heartbeat quicken. The scent of pine needles made Dr. Dressler sneeze violently, and he was startled by a voice from inside the darkened house.
Bless you,
Nadine squawked.
Are those for hates? 'Cause I'm tired.
3. The students, groggy and rumpled, gathered shortly after dawn in the school parking lot. Nick was sitting alone on a curb when Marta walked up.
You okay? She asked.
Just tired is all. He'd been on the computer since 4 a.m., but no emails had arrived from his father in Iraq. Marta sat down.
Where's Smoke?
Haven't seen him, Nick said.
Good. Maybe he quit school. He's old enough to drive. He's got to be old enough to drop out, right?
Don't get your hopes up.
Marta said, I'm sorry. But he seriously scares me.
Worse than her?
No way, said Nick. Mrs. Starch had arrived wide awake and in high spirits. She wore wading boots, stiff canvas pants, a baggy long-sleeved shirt, and a frayed straw hat under an upturned veil of mosquito netting. Mrs. Starch always prepared for the worst.
Slather up, people, she barked. Sunblock! Buck juice, lip balm. It's a jungle out there.
Nick and Marta got in line for the bus.
Maybe she'll get bit by a scorpion, Marta muttered. That would be awful, Nick whispered for the scorpion.
Mrs. Starch whistled sharply.
Did everybody in my classes remember to bring their journals?
She held a black writing notebook above her head.
Keep a list of everything you see, insects, mammals, birds, trees. This will count as a lab grade.
Graham, who was dressed like a pint-sized version of the crocodile hunter, raised his hand. Mrs. Starch ignored him, as always. "We have 3 portable first aid kits," she went on, "and each teacher will be carrying one. If you get into a situation where you need help, speak up right away. Remember, stay with your hiking teams. Do not wander off, and most importantly, be respectful toward this very special place that we're exploring. Turn off your cell phones. If I or any of the other teachers hear one ringing, it will be confiscated." Mrs. Starch put down the black notebook and picked up a device that Nick recognized as a portable boat horn. They made loud, gassy honks and were a favorite toy of drunken idiots at Buccaneers football games. Nick's dad had season tickets. "This will be our emergency signal," said Mrs. Starch, demonstrating the boat horn with a short, ear-splitting beep. "If you hear that sound, immediately line up behind your teacher and proceed straight back to the bus. Any questions?" Graham hopped up and down, waving one arm. Mrs. Starch stared past him. "All right, people," she said, clapping. "Let's enjoy our day in the Black Vine Swamp." The bus was roomy and clean and air-conditioned, unlike the one they rode to school. Nick and Marta sat together toward the front, their backpacks stowed under their seats. Marta nudged Nick and pointed out the window. Mrs. Starch was getting into her car, one of those teardrop-shaped hybrid models that ran on both electricity and gasoline. It had a Save the Manatee license plate. "I guess she left her broomstick at home," Marta said. Nick thought it was odd that Mrs. Starch wasn't riding out to the swamp with everybody else. He wondered if, after what happened the day before, she might not want to be on the bus with Smoke. But to Nick and Marta's relief, Smoke was nowhere to be seen. The other science teachers, Mr. Neal and Miss Moffat, moved up and down the aisle, collecting forms from each of the students, the forms which were signed by the parents, so that it wasn't the school's fault if their kid got hurt on the field trip. "I almost called in sick. I do not like swamps," Marta confided to Nick. He said, "I hope we see a panther." "Are you crazy? Seriously, that would be so cool." Never in the recorded history of Florida had a panther harmed a human being. Now there were fewer than 100 of the big cats left in the whole state. "I got a video camera," Nick said, "just in case." Marta said her mother wanted her to bring home a ghost orchid. I said, "Yeah, right, Mom. It's against the law." And she goes, "But I'll take good care of it." And I'm like, "You want me to go to jail or what? Give me a break." Nick could tell that Marta was in a better mood because Mrs. Starch wasn't on the bus. The absence of Smoke was a bonus. "How's your dad?" Marta asked, which caught Nick off guard. "He's okay." "When's he get back?" 22 days. Nick hadn't told Marta or any other friends that his father had been sent to Iraq. The Naples newspaper had published the names of those serving in the war zone, and the list had been posted on the bulletin board outside the Truman Gym. "And after that, he's home for good?" Marta asked. "I sure hope." Nick put on his iPod, and Marta put on hers. The ride took almost an hour because a truck full of tomatoes had flipped over on State Road 29, blocking traffic. A fire engine crew was hosing the ketchup-colored muck off the pavement. Nick spotted a dead buck by the side of the road, and he figured that the tomato truck must have struck it in the early fog. He wondered if the deer had been running from a panther. Eventually, the bus made a slow turn onto a rutted dirt track that was very narrow. Twice the bus had to pull over to let flatbed trucks pass from the opposite direction. Nick noticed that both trucks had red diamond-shaped logos on the doors and looked brand new. They barely slowed at all, churning dust as they rumbled by the bus. The wet prairies that usually glistened in the morning had turned brownish and crispy without rainfall.
Ahead, Nick could see a rising tree line that marked the edge of the black vine swamp. He dug into his backpack for a tube of sunblock, and he smeared some on his arms and neck.
"Don't forget your nose," Marta said. "Here, let me do it."
"No, that's okay."
"Hush!"
She snatched the tube, squirted a dollop of white goo into the palm of one hand, and then carefully coated every square inch of Nick's face, like she was painting on a mask. He was terrified that the other kids might see what she was doing.
"Now it's my turn," Marta announced, tugging off her iPod.
"What?" She handed him the tube and shut her eyelids tightly.
"Careful. That stuff burns if it drips in your eyeballs."
Nick felt trapped. He hunkered low in his seat. Marta said,
"My uncle gets basal cells all the time. That's a kind of skin cancer. They cut them off at the doctor's office."
Nick hastily smeared the sunblock cream on Marta's cheeks and forehead.
"Okay," he said in a low voice. "You're good."
"Ears, too," she told him.
"Oh, come on. What's your problem, Nick? I'm sorry, but it runs in our family. Basal cells. You can ask my mom."
He couldn't say no, but touching her skin felt weird. Not bad, just weird. Afterward, Marta checked herself out in the bus driver's rearview mirror to make sure that Nick hadn't missed any exposed places.
"Good job," she said. "That wasn't so awful, was it?"
For the rest of the trip, Nick pretended to be fascinated by the view out the window. Finally, the bus jounced to a stop and the kids piled out. Mrs. Starch was waiting. The mosquito veil wasn't quite long enough to cover her jutting chin, leaving her vivid anvil-shaped scar on display. Beneath the mesh, she wore enormous purple sunglasses that made her look like a mutant dragonfly.
"Come on, people. Get organized," she said, clapping again and starting to pace.
Each teacher had a team of 15 students. The kids milled around anxiously while the names were called out. Nobody wanted to be on Mrs. Starch's team because they knew that Mrs. Starch would make them work harder than the other teachers. The whole point of going on a field trip was to goof off. Marta leaned close to Nick and said, "If she calls on me, I swear to God, I'll fake a heart attack." But by some small miracle, it was Mr. Neal who called out Marta's name, and then Nick's. They had been spared. Mrs. Starch led the whole group down a winding boardwalk through the scrub and pineland hammock into thicker woods. There, in the cool shade of ancient bald cypress trees, the boardwalk ended. The team split up in separate directions. Above the treetops, the sky shone bright and cloudless. Despite the drought, there was still enough water in the Strand to make the hike a soggy challenge. The students had been advised to wear long pants to protect their legs and to wear old sneakers that they could throw away after the trip. Only Graham had been foolish enough to show up in shorts, and soon his shins looked like they'd been clawed by a tomcat. Mr. Neal's specialty was botany, and every so often he'd pause to point out a plant or a shrub of local interest. Mindful of Mrs. Starch's instructions, Nick and Marta would automatically pull their journals from their backpacks and take notes. By the time they stopped for the first rest break, their species list included pond apple trees, strangler figs, laurel oaks, wax myrtles, sebal palms, wild coffee, and resurrection ferns. Animal life was more elusive. Mr. Neal spotted a barred owl high on a tree bough, and later a young red-bellied turtle basking on a mossy log. Graham shrieked at the sight of a ribbon snake that he somehow mistook for a poisonous cottonmouth. Marta and two other girls briefly got tangled in a tent-sized spider web, while a boy named Mickey Maris captured a green anole lizard that Mr. Neal made him release on the spot. Nick, who was scouting for signs of panthers, came across fresh pick tracks, but not much else. Occasionally, he could hear the other student teams as they moved at a distance throughout the swamp. Once he was certain that he'd picked up Mrs. Starch's voice yodeling, "We are now in bromeliad heaven." At noon, Mr. Neal's group sat down for lunch beneath a crooked cypress that he estimated was 500 years old. The kids had brought their own sandwiches. Nick's was turkey and cheese, Marta's was peanut butter and Nutella. They shared a lime Gatorade that Nick's mother had packed in a padded cooler bag. Addressing the team, Mr. Neal said, "Can anyone tell me why we're not getting bothered by mosquitoes?" Graham's hand shot up. He looked flabbergasted when Mr. Neal called his name.
"Because?"
he began.
"Because?"
"Yes, Graham?"
"Because of..."
"Go on."
Of...
Graham shrugged in defeat.
"I don't have a clue."
Mr. Neal pointed to another student, Rachel.
"Because the weather's been too dry for skeeters,"
Rachel said.
Good theory," the teacher said. "But there's still plenty of water for the little buggers to lay their eggs in. Nick Waters, what's your guess?"
Nick wasn't paying attention. He was thinking about his father. Marta elbowed him and he looked up, flustered, and said,
"What? I didn't hear the question."
"Why aren't we getting chewed up by mosquitoes?" Mr. Neal asked with a touch of impatience.
Marta decided to return Nick's favor from the day before in Mrs. Starch's class. She cut herself into the discussion and said,
"Because mosquito fish are eating up all the baby mosquitoes."
"Excellent."
Mr. Neal looked relieved that somebody got it right.
"Now I've got a question," Marta said. "Why do they call it the Black Vine Swamp when all the vines we've seen are green?"
Graham raised his hand to try again, and the other students groaned. Mr. Neal said,
"I'm not sure I know the answer to that one. Anybody got a theory?"
At that moment, they heard a piercing cry rise from among the towering cypresses. It didn't sound like any noise that a person could make. Mr. Neal was as startled as the hikers, although he tried not to show it. He raised a finger to his lips as a signal for everyone to stay quiet. A woodpecker hammering on a dead stump stopped abruptly and flitted away. Some of the kids got spooked, but Nick was excited. He thought he knew what kind of animal they'd heard. He grabbed the video camera from his backpack and, after groping to locate the record button, aimed the lens toward the part of the woods from where the wild cry had come. It was hard to make out details through the viewfinder because of the forest shadows, and because Nick's hands were shaking slightly. Marta had edged closer, peeking over his shoulder.
"You see that? See it?"
She pointed at the screen of the viewfinder. Something was running among the tree trunks, a large tannish blur.
"Where'd it go?" Marta whispered. "What was it?"
"Just wait," Nick said, but there was no other movement. Moments later, the students heard splashes and then a heavy rustling that faded into silence. Nobody made a peep until Mr. Neal spoke.
"Probably just a fox or a wild hog. Nothing to worry about," he said, not sounding too sure of himself.
Nick switched off the camera.
"That was too big for a fox. I'll bet it was a panther."
Not all of the other kids shared his curiosity about the big cats, and some of them expressed dismay at the possibility of crossing one's path. Mickey Maris stood up and declared that they should all march back to the bus at once. Mr. Neal said,
"I doubt seriously if that was a panther."
"What about a bear?" Graham squeaked. "They got black bears out of here. Miss Sturt said so."
While Mr. Neal tried to calm the students, Nick fiddled with the control menu on the video camera. He wanted to replay the tape at slow speed so that he might get a better look at the creature. Marta tweaked his arm.
"Hey, do you smell something?"
Nick looked up from the camera, took a sniff.
"Not smoke," he said. "Definitely."
Just then they heard two long blasts from Mrs. Starch's boat horn. Everybody began murmuring and clustered around Mr. Neal, who told them to follow him back toward the boardwalk as quickly as possible. "But no running," he said, "and no talking." The students didn't have to be told twice. Hurriedly, they zipped up their book bags and lined up behind the teacher, who led them briskly along the same wet, peat-filled slough that they had come in on. The smoky odor grew heavier, and in some places a gray haze was visible through the trees. After assembling at the boardwalk, the three teams merged to form a long single line. At the very end of it was Mrs. Starch, who burped the air horn to make the students turn around and pay attention.
"Listen up, people," she said. "A small wildfire has sprung up on the far edge of the swamp. Pretty common for this time of the year. It'll probably burn out when it reaches the cypress muck. But there's no sense taking any chances. That's why we're cutting short our field trip and heading back to school. Straight back to school."
Marta groaned and leaned against Nick.
"What if she makes us go to her class? I'm going to be sick again, all over the place."
"Pray for a flat tire on the way home," Nick said. He was disappointed because he'd hoped for another opportunity to see the panther, or whatever it was that had darted into the cypress shadows. However, a wildfire was nothing to fool with. If a strong wind kicked up, the blaze would race across the land faster than any human could possibly run.
"Please stay in line behind Mr. Neal and Miss Muffet," Mrs. Starch said. "I'll be coming along in a minute. Libby dropped her medicine, so I'm going back to find it."
She clapped so loudly that it sounded like a paper bag popping.
"Now get your fannies in gear. Move!"
At the time, nobody questioned Mrs. Starch's decision to go back. Libby Marshall had frequent asthma attacks, and she always carried an inhaler. The haze from the fire would make it harder for her to breathe.
"Quickly and quietly,"
urged Miss Moffat as the kids began streaming toward the bus. Nick was walking behind Marta, who was behind Graham, who was behind Mickey Maris, who was behind Rachel, who was behind Hector, the star of the soccer team. The students were in such a rush that they were stepping on each other's heels. Nick lost one of his sneakers when he was overrun by the boy next in line, an algebra ace named Gene, who stepped around him and kept going. When Nick knelt to retrieve his shoe, he glanced back down the curving boardwalk just in time to see Mrs. Starch in her straw hat and dragonfly glasses marching alone into the smoky swamp. He had no idea that she wouldn't be coming out. 4. The camera battery went dead, so Nick and Marta couldn't view the videotape on the bus. By the time the kids got back to the school, it was so late that Mr. Neal and Miss Moffat let them finish the day doing homework in the cafeteria. Marta had an appointment with her orthodontist, so Nick walked home from the bus stop alone, his sneakers swishing. He kicked them off at the front door and ran to the den to check his email. Nothing. Nick's father belonged to the 53rd Infantry Brigade of the Florida Army National Guard, which called itself the Gator Brigade, and had its own website. Whenever a soldier got killed in action, a memorial page was posted. Nick held his breath and clicked on the tab. A photograph appeared of a reservist who died when a roadside bomb exploded while he was on foot patrol near Baghdad. It wasn't Nick's dad, but Nick read the tribute closely. The soldier was 30 years old with a wife and two small children in Tampa. The picture showed the man dressed in his crisply pressed army uniform in front of an American flag. He looked so strong and confident that it was almost impossible to believe he was dead. Nick swallowed to keep himself from crying. He closed out the National Guard website and switched over to YouTube so that he could watch some funny videos. Nick considered it his number one job to keep up his mother's spirits. He didn't want her coming in the door and catching him with tears in his eyes. By the time she got home from work, he felt better. He had recharged the camera battery, and he was getting ready to look at the tape from the Black Vine Swamp.
"How was the field trip?"
his mom asked. Nick told her about the wildfire.
"Thank God nobody was hurt," she said. "How did it start?"
Nick shrugged. "Who knows? It's the dry season. Fires pop up all the time."
Well, you definitely had a more exciting day than I did.
She removed some plastic containers from the refrigerator and announced that she was fixing a Greek salad for dinner because she was too tired to cook.
One cool thing happened. I think I saw a panther in the woods, Nick said. It's on the video. You want to check it out?
His mom sat on the sofa. Nick plugged the camera into the wall and connected it to the television set.
You'll have to watch close. It's kind of blurry, he said, and real short.
When he pressed the play button, a cypress strand came into view. The picture, though wobbly and somewhat out of focus, was easier to see on a TV screen than on the camera's small viewfinder.
There it is,
Nick exclaimed when the tannish form crossed between the tree trunks. After a few moments of stillness, the screen went blank.
That's it?
His mother asked. Nick touched the rewind button.
Let's watch again.
From beginning to end, the tape lasted only 15 seconds. Nick paused it when the animal came into view. His mom said,
Honey, that's one funky-looking panther.
The animal was moving at an angle away from the camera, so its head wasn't fully visible. The torso didn't look long and streamlined like a panther's. The creature was more blocky and upright.
Maybe a wild hog, his mother said.
Wrong color. We heard a cry, and it sounded like a big cat, I swear. Nick played the tape in slow motion, rewound it, and played it again.
Where's the tail? He thought glumly. Panthers have long, black-tipped tails. Freeze it right there,
his mother popped up from the sofa.
Okay, now zoom in. Zoom!
I can't zoom in play mode. It's not like Photoshop.
Then just look.
She went up to the TV and pointed to a dark band around the animal's midsection.
Can you see that?
Nick could see it just fine. I don't believe this, he said. His mom smiled.
You've been ponged, Nicky.
You mean punked.